Welcome to episode 61 of the Nightlight Stories podcast, recorded on March 4th, 2014. This podcast shares one original story each episode that will light up the imaginations of children of all ages, anytime, anywhere. I'm your host and narrator, Miss Mel.
Hey, Miss Mel. Did you mention that this is part two of Terrapenny or Nada?
Not yet, Mr. Chris, but now that you mention it, part one is available for free on iTunes and on our blog. If you haven't heard it yet, I'd suggest you listen to it first in order to follow along with part two. Don't you think, Mr. Chris?
Yeah, I agree, Miss Mel. Also, although it might not seem like it, Terrapenny or Nada part one and two are also part of the Pagona Vitticep series. They are standalone stories, and you don't need to have listened to the Pagona Vitticep stories before listening to these two, but it does add a little something extra magical to the experience if you listen to those first.
Pretty cool. Speaking of magical, as you listen to the story, consider the following. What kind of magical place could your imagination create?
We'd like to thank our 11-year-old friend, Sophie, from Nottingham, for giving us a brief recap of what happened in part one.
You can hear more of Sophie and her family over at their podcast, the O-Beep Geocaching Podcast. The O-Beep Geocaching Podcast is a family-friendly show which covers news, events, and discusses topics relating to geocaching. The hosts range in ages from 9 to 39, which offer some unique perspectives on geocaching. You can find them at www.ohbeep.com. And follow O-Beep on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. We'll have links to all those ways to follow them on our blog, nightlightstories.net.
Hoover Hawkins has a love for maps and geography, but no desire to travel for fear of getting dirty. Instead, he chooses to keep his explorations limited to what he can find online. In the final lesson of his fourth grade school year, he was introduced to a worldwide hobby of geocaching. In his haste to find all the boxes known as caches hidden by his teacher around the playground, he failed to work with his teammates and follow directions. Despite of his unfortunate and disappointing choices, Haver left the school year intrigued by geocaching. Using his portable device, he looked up the other hidden caches in the area. He discovered that there was a number of caches hidden locally by a geocacher named Babachui that had never been found by anyone else. Determined to be the first to find Babachui's caches, Haver went off and located what no one else could ever find.
Terrapenny or Nada, Part 2, by Chris and Melissa Bouguet. The next morning, Haver packed his backpack with essentials. A water bottle, two granola bars, a pair of gloves, a packet of disinfectant wipes, and a squeezable tube of hand sanitizer. He launched the geocaching app and pedaled in the direction of the first of Babatucci's hidden caches. When the built-in distance measurer read 0 feet, he stopped and hopped off. Could he be in the right place? He was on a sidewalk in his neighborhood, a plain, ordinary sidewalk. In fact, he was pretty sure his mother drove by this very spot every time they went to the grocery store. Could he really have passed by the hidden cache all this time and have never noticed it? Would an expert geocacher like Babatucci hide something in such a highly trafficked area? Haver looked around, but didn't see anything spectacular about the location. According to the app, he was right on top of the hidden capsule, but the only thing near him was a large maple tree between the sidewalk and the road. Haver put his hands on his hips and gazed up into its canopy. He strained to see if there was any object dangling from the branches. Nothing. He walked around the base of the tree, looking for anything out of the ordinary, but found no signs of an obscured cache. If I were a master at hiding treasure boxes, where would I have hidden the cache? Then he remembered to check the hint in the app to see if it revealed any clues about the hidden location. His thumb flicked the button, and he studied it like a detective solving a crime. The hint read, "Careful, although worse than his bite, it is only scratching the surface of what's to come." A bite? A bite to eat? Was he looking for food? In a tree? An apple? No, this wasn't an apple tree. Was he looking for something that lived in a tree that bites? A snake? Do snakes scratch? What did it all mean? Come on, Haver. No one would hide a cache in a snake. Focus. Break it down. Worse than his bite. Snakes bit people, but if not a snake, then what? What else bites? What has something worse than a bite? Then it came to him. A dog. A dog bites. A dog also barks. And wasn't there a phrase, this dog's bark is worse than his bite? Bark. That had to be it. Haver slid his device back into his backpack and yanked out the bottle of water. He pointed the cap at the tree trunk and then focused his eyes on the spot of the tree just beyond the top of the bottle. Using the cap as a makeshift guide, Haver scanned up and down the tree, covering every square inch. He wasn't quite sure what he was looking for, but he felt in his gut that he'd recognize it when he saw it. The bark was gnarly and twisted. In places, it oozed a wet, sticky sap that trickled down the outside. The tree showed spots of trauma where an insect had taken root or a sap-sucking bird had bored a hole. How many squirrels had clawed their way up, leaving scratches behind? How many birds had perched in its branches, leaving droppings before heading back to their nests? What kinds of insects made cocoons in the crevices, only to leave the discarded dead husks behind to rot? Haver felt sick when he thought about how filthy the tree trunk actually was. Then he noticed a particularly thick purplish glob of sap that looked slightly out of place. It was more round, almost perfectly so, and had a pinkish hue to it. It looked almost exactly the same as the other blobs of sap, but somehow it was different. It shimmered, shifting colors reflecting amber, or was it more of a bronze light? Something about it made it look different than the rest. Moving his head right and then left, Haver studied the foreign blob of sap. He thought he saw a glint of silver embedded inside the translucent globule. Something bothered him about it. It looked artificial. Haver brought up a finger to touch it and then hesitated. The other caches he had found were easy enough to locate and, more importantly, were hidden in places that didn't require him to get dirty. He should have known that Babatucci's caches wouldn't be so easily obtained. Mustering his courage, he tapped the tip of the water bottle on the pustule. The liquid inside the bubble wobbled, rippling in time to the touch. There was definitely something silver hiding inside, but Haver couldn't make out what it was past the thick ooze. He pressed the cap of the water bottle harder, thinking he could make the bubble pop. He expected it to tear and seep out, draining down the side of the trunk. Instead, it just indented, like pushing on a jello jiggler. Apparently, the pressure inside the bubble wasn't great enough to warrant an explosion. Haver leaned in, pushing the top of the water bottle harder into the blob. Again, the gelatin inside squished and morphed, but it did not rupture. "Why won't you pop?" A little voice in the back of his head reminded him of the second part of the hint. It's only scratching the surface of what's to come. "I need to scratch it." Haver looked around for a stick or anything hooked or pointy to use so he wouldn't have to touch the bubble with his bare hands. He couldn't find anything. He would need to use his finger. He didn't want to get sticky sap all over his hands, but in order to get the piece of silver, he couldn't think of any other way. He closed his eyes and took a deep breath. He could do this. It was just sap and nothing more. He had wipes in his bag that would get the guck right off. All he had to do was pick at the surface lightly and let the sap seep out. Heck, he might not even get any on his hands. He took the nail from his right index finger and scratched at the gummy substance. In an instant, and all at once, the glob ruptured with a pop, spurting a goopy, golden goo all over Haver's hand, chest, and face. He lunged back, startled by the spray. It was disgusting. Great dollops of goo dripped down his face, covering his eyes, nose, and lips. It smelled sickly sweet, like honey dipped in sugar rolled in caramel. It clung to him like glue. Haver freaked, pulling back further and squealing. It felt icky, like a dirty wet sponge covering his face. He clawed at his shirt, pulling it untucked, and scrambled to use it to wipe his face. Clearing his mouth, he inhaled deeply and shuddered from the event. He couldn't believe what had just happened. Of all the places Baba Tucci could have hidden a cache, why did it have to be within a pod of inky goo? "It didn't stop me, though," he said aloud. "I got it now." He blinked away the goop and focused on the tiny piece of silver sticking out of the tree, released from its tiny prison. He plucked it from the trunk with one goop-covered hand. The tiny piece of metal slid out easily. It was a key. It was plain, not unlike the one he used for his house, except this one's head, where you'd grip to turn it, formed the letter B. A key? A key to what? A chest? Another cache? Where? Could the key unlock something that he hadn't yet discovered hidden at one of the other locations? No, the key was stuck into the bark. What if... Haver slid the key back into the trunk exactly as he had found it. Then he turned it once to the right. Something inside the tree clicked, and for a moment, Haver wondered if the object he was standing in front of was actually a tree at all. Then the tree exploded in a cacophony of metallic whizzes and grinding noises. Gears clinked, ratcheting some sort of internal movement. Haver imagined belts and chairs twirling around springs and yanked by pulleys just behind the surface of the bark. The tree vibrated with life, but it wasn't chlorophyll or cellulose that pumped within. Instead, it was something else, something completely man-made. A rush of steam hissed and burst from the bark. Haver covered his eyes with his sticky hand, but the steam quickly dissipated in the air. Tendrils of vapor streamed up from the bark, forming a rectangular edge carved into the surface. It looked like the outline of a drawer with a key in the center. Haver reached forward and, using the key like a knob, pulled on the drawer. Sure enough, the key held on to the wood, and a small drawer emerged from inside the tree. With his dirty hand, Haver gingerly removed it from the tree and let it fall into his clean one. The drawer was tiny, just large enough to fit in his palm. Cradled inside was a yellow, tarnished piece of paper rolled tightly like a scroll. He wanted to unravel the scroll, but he didn't dare with the goop on his hand. Instead, he placed the drawer on the ground, slipped off his backpack, and using just his clean hand, unzipped it to retrieve the disinfectant wipes. Cleaning the mess off his hands and face was slow, laborious work that seemed to take forever, especially with the potential clue to a mystery resting before him. "Take your time. You don't want to make the same mistake you did in Mr. Bradley's class," he told himself. "The parchment isn't going anywhere." Haver used the entire packet of wipes and pushed the dirty pile into a side pocket of his backpack. His hands still weren't completely free of the grime, but he was confident that he could handle the paper without ruining it. Using his index fingers on each end of the roll, he lifted the parchment out of the drawer. It felt old and fragile. Careful not to tear the ancient relic, he unrolled the scroll. On it, a message was written in elegant, looping letters. 11/21. Congratulations on finding the 11th of 21 caches hidden by Baba Tucci. If you're reading this, it means you might be an elite treasure hunter. Scan the code below to get your next part of the puzzle. Find all 21 for the real prize. Below the text was a square, no larger than a stamp, filled with patterned black lines and blocks. Haver immediately recognized it as a quick response code from activities he had done at school. In a flash, Haver pulled his device out of his backpack. He flipped to his quick response code reader app and hovered it over the code. The screen flashed once and popped up with a confirmation message. Are you sure you want to open this site? Was he sure? Curiosity burned in him hotter than a bonfire on the sun, but something gave him pause. He had a distinct feeling that pressing yes would start something he wasn't going to be able to control. Maybe he should just close this up right now, put the cache away, and go home. Haver's eyes glanced back to the note, and the words Elite Treasure Hunter popped out at him. Apprehension gave way to the promise of prestige. He pressed yes and watched something unexpected flash onto his screen. We hope you enjoyed the story. We'd like to send out bright birthday wishes to Will D. of Texas,
Aunt Julie of New York,
Drew from Colorado,
Stephen from Colorado,
and Miss Sally of Virginia. We hope your days sparkled. As always, we look forward to watching the glow grow brighter with the many stories we can share together.